Okay. So the feedback I'm seeing here is that most of you want to know the practical aspect, so which is good, which I appreciate, because now in Tattva Bodha we have learned the first prakaranam, which is the encyclopedia, the glossary of all the terms of Vedanta. Those we have known, and we have also seen the importance of sadhana chatushtaya sampatti to do any kind of Vedanta sadhana. Sadhana chatushtaya sampatti is extremely, extremely important. And I appreciate that most of you recognize that and want to know what are the specific sadhana methods to follow to develop that sadhana chatushtaya sampatti. So that as we go in the Vedanta learning, things can become clearer and clearer and they start making more sense. That is good. And that is exactly the reason why I am proposing to alternate between Vedanta texts and bhakti and karma related texts. Because when we are talking about in the Vedanta text, so in the next Vedanta text, for example, if we take Apatma Bodha or Viveka Chudamani or Dridrusha Viveka, any of these, we will be talking only about Atma and Atma Vivekam, how to differentiate between Atma and Anatma, how to recognize the Atma Swarupam, what are the problems in recognizing Atma Swarupam. So only the Jnana part of it mostly we'll be talking. So that is all Vedanta, Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. What is the practical side of that? The practical side of it is in bhakti and karma. The practical side of Vedanta is in bhakti and karma. So only through bhakti or upasana and karma yoga, we can develop the sadhana chitta sampatti. So that is the practical path. That is why I am proposing to alternate between the texts that propound bhakti and karma yoga and the Vedanta texts, so that parallelly we can look at aspects of developing the sadhana chatushtaya sampatti, and in various scenarios these bhakti texts, they propose so many different types of scenarios that we come across in our daily life, and during that discussion we will come to know how to deal with that scenario, how to conduct ourselves in daily life, how to develop the right kind of bhakti for Ishvara, what is the right kind of bhakti to develop towards Ishvara. All those things we will come to know in those texts. So that is the second way of doing it. But both these aspects of learning are only, you know, a group type learning. So those, whatever is applicable for the whole group in the class, the guru will teach. But beyond that, if someone is interested in something particular that pertains to their particular situation, that will be a one-on-one conversation or one-on-one guidance or something like that. So in a group setting, in a class setting, the way we will go about doing the discussion or knowing more about the sadhana part of it is through these texts that we take up in between the Vedanta texts. So that we will do. Then there was also one of you wanted to know the tarkika aspect of Vedanta. So more on the Tarkashastram side. That is possible, but if most of you are finding Tattva Bodha itself, you know, kind of heavy in terms of its content, if we go to the tarkika aspect of Vedanta, I am pretty sure 80% of you will not come to the next class. because the Tarkashastra side of Vedanta is only dry logic, 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 and logic only. And that too in a very, very, very technical way. Extremely technical words, technical logic. So not even regular common logic. So extremely technical in nature. So only those of you who are really interested in going towards Vedanta and to know about Vedanta from a Shastra point of view, a deep academic point of view, they can go to the Tarkika aspect of Vedanta. At some point in the future, I will cover the basics of Tarkashastra. What are some of the logical arguments that Tarkashastra puts forward? Because to understand, as we go forward, to understand more and more or deeper and deeper aspects of Vedanta, we will need help of Tarkashastra. So we will cover Tarkashastra, but I don't think the time is right now, because that will scare a lot of people. So I'm going to push this Tarkika aspect of Vedanta. We will first get to the Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampatti. That is much more important for us to implement in our daily life than the Tarkika aspect of Vedanta. So how to develop the Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampatti? Because as we develop Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampatti, whether we can learn Vedanta or not, whether we can pick up Vedanta or not, whether we can go deeper into Vedanta or not, one definite advantage we have from developing Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampatti is a better and better life, higher and higher quality of life, less frustrations, less distractions, less anger, less hatred, less negative emotions, because you will know how to lead a noble life. You will know how to lead a more balanced life. Lead a more a life that is not prone to extreme emotional swings. So all those are possible by picking up and developing the Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampatti. That is a practical, immediate benefit that Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampatti gives. Whether one gets into the study of Vedanta or not, it gives a practical benefit right away. So that is going to be much more useful to most people than the technical aspect of Vedanta. So we will definitely do that in the Bhakti Granthas and the Karma related topics that we take up. The two technical questions that were asked was, Atma and Brahman are supposed to be the same. Why is it so hard to understand? And the other one was, can you explain Maya one more time? Okay. So Atma and Brahman and this concept of Maya one more time. So that we can definitely do. What I can do is, after the questions have been answered from Tattva Bodha, I can do a recap, not of Tattva Bodha itself. The Tattva Bodha recap I would like you all to do as a homework. I will give you a homework on what to do, because Tattva Bodha and Bhagavad Gita should be the reference books we should be having with us all the time when we have any class, whether it's a Bhakti class or a Karma Yoga class or a Jnana Yoga class. Going forward, this Tattva Bodha and Bhagavad Gita, because we will be quoting a lot from both Bhagavad Gita and Tattva Bodha. And Tattva Bodha not as a textbook, but I would like all of you to contribute to create a a simple document with all the sutras of the Svabodha and a simple definition for each of the sutra. So it to start with Atma Kaha, Stula Sukshma Karana Sharirat Vyatiriktaha, Pancha Kosha Atitasan, Satchidananda Swarupa San, Yas Tishthati Sa Atma. So that is the sutra from Tattva Bodha. So that sutra and a simple two-line definition, English definition of that sutra. So if we do that for each of the texts that we keep covering, one simple document for each of them, then they become a very, very easy reference for all of you. Anytime when we have a class, you have that one or two page document in front of you, and you can easily go back and refer. That will act as a refresher, a very good refresher for all of you to remember the definitions, and so that these concepts will you can hammer in as we go. So I would like as many of you as possible to maybe, you know, create a Google document or something and contribute towards creating that document. This is for you. This is for you all, your advantage. And if we can make that a regular practice, I don't need to tell from next time, you can just do it as we keep going. That will create a very good library for your reference. And if there are people who are interested, they can create a much more detailed document of Tattva Bodha notes. That's what we used to do. When we used to study all these things, we used to create notes and share it online and collaborate. Because that is a very good form of mananam. Shravanam is what you do when the guru teaches. And mananam is not only just reminding for yourself. This is a collaborative work that you're doing by remembering, hearing to the lecture again, and writing it in your own words, in the notes form, so that you can learn them better, you can learn the concepts better, and you can retain the concepts better. So, but that's a second step. If somebody is really serious in learning Vedanta, they can start doing that, start doing the notes. But much more important is these bullet points, sutras, and their simple definitions. So that will be a very good exercise for you. So if you can do that before we start the next one, which is Bhaja Govindam, that will be good. It shouldn't take a lot of time. So that is one thing I would like you all to do, the Tattva Bodha part of it. Since I covered a lot of Vedanta in Tattva Bodha, and I covered the darshanas also before that, what I can do after answering all these questions about Tattva Bodha is, maybe I can do a recap of the Vedanta. What does Advaita actually say about all the things that we have learned so far, so that in a summarized way you will have a good idea. Okay, this is what it is. This is what the entire concept is. And this is how X is related to Y, Y is related to Z, Z is related to A, B, C, so on and so forth. And this is where Jiva fits in. This is where Maya fits in. This is where Brahman fits in. This is where Jagat fits in. This is where Sthula Sharira fits in. This is where Karana Sharira fits in. So all these things, we can do one class, we can do a recap before moving to next topic. That we can do, but I don't want to cover Tattva Bodha again as a recap. I can do a recap of the Vedanta itself. So just one class, I can do a recap of Vedanta. So if you guys are interested in that, let me know. I can do that. But Tattva Bodha itself, I would like you all to do some homework and create the document. Okay, so that's what I wanted to say. So now it's open to the floor. What do you guys want to do?
Questions and answers, Sunny?
Yeah, we can do questions and answers, definitely.
The one question, Guru Garu, regarding the sadhana chitushtaya sampatti, like we'll be covering that in the next text or like a practical aspect of it.
Yeah, the Vedanta sadhana itself assumes that the adhikari is sadhana chitushtaya sampannaha. So one has already achieved sadhana chitushtaya sampatti. Ideally, he or she is the one who should come and sit in the Vedanta class. No one else should. So within Vedanta class, we won't be talking about sadhana chitushtaya sampatti because the assumption is that one already has sadhana chitushtaya sampatti. So the practical aspects of how to develop sadhana chitushtaya sampatti, we will be talking in the bhakti class, which is the next topic we'll be taking up in the form of Bhaja Govinda. We call it bhakti, but there is nothing in our shastras that is devoid of Vedanta. Anything we talk about, eventually it is Vedanta only. Everything is we talk about, it is all about moksha, Brahman, Ishvara, and the mithyatvam of Jagat. That's all we'll be, any shastra you take Ramayana, Mahabharata, Bhagavatam, Vedas, Upanishad, Itihasas, Puranas, anything we talk about, that is the conclusion. So anything we talk about eventually comes to Jnana only, but in those texts we'll be deliberately staying at a more Upasana, Bhakti, practical level, on a day-to-day level. So that is where we'll be covering Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampatti. We will cover sadhana chitushtaya sampatti, how to develop them, but what I don't want to cover, what I will not cover is, what is sadhana chitushtaya sampatti, what are the constituents of sadhana chitushtaya sampatti. So those things I want everyone to memorize, because those are the highest goal that we have in our life, to develop those. If you don't even know what they are, then that's a problem when you come to the class. So I would like everyone to literally memorize what sadhana chitushtaya sampatti is. So whenever I ask, okay, what are the constituents of sadhana chitushtaya sampatti, all the 9 constituents of sadhana chitushtaya sampatti, one should be able to just simply recite. Only then you will actually know, okay, am I developing X, Y, and Z? Out of these 9, what am I developing? When I'm sitting for a puja, what am I developing? When I'm sitting for my japam, what am I developing? When I'm sitting, going to the temple and doing puja, doing abhishekam, doing homam, what am I developing? When I'm dealing with my family day to day, what am I developing? So this is the thought process of a Vedanta sadhaka. So 24/7, his only thought is, what are the sadhana chitushtaya sampatti I am developing? Am I developing viveka? Am I developing vairagya? Okay, what am I lacking in my viveka? What am I lacking in my vairagya? What am I lacking in my mumukshatvam? What are the components of shamadha shatka sampatti? Where am I lacking? What am I not doing? So this is the only way one can improve in developing higher qualities towards atma sadhana. So 24/7, one should know what sadhana chitushtaya sampatti is. One should know where one stands with respect to sadhana chitushtaya sampatti and what one is lacking and what one should work on. And this is the map. Everything else, all the other Vedanta terminology and all, okay, it will come later. But this is the most important. So work on completely, internalizing that sadhana chitushtaya sampatti definition and the names of sadhana chitushtaya sampatti, all that. Then when we come to the Bhaja Govindam class, as the context comes, I will take up one of the sadhana chitushtaya sampattis. We can have a conversation on how this applies to, for example, vivekam or vairagyam or shraddha or or shama or something like that. So that way you will know, okay, so this is how I develop shama, this is how I develop dhamma, etc. Okay?
We'll write that. Yes, we'll write that, Guru.
Okay. So, Guru, our first question today. I heard you said there was a question about Atma and Brahman are the same. On that note, actually, the main question is, are Brahman and Ishvara are the same?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Is that all your question?
That's the one question, first question.
Okay. Ishvara and Brahman are the same. For all practical purposes, Ishvara and Brahman are the same. When we say Ishvara or Brahman, we are talking about one Moolapadartham only. One Moolapadartham, which is the Karanam for this entire death, which is changeless, which is Nirgunam, which is Nirakaram, which is Sarvapraptam, which is in the form of Sat and Chit, existence and consciousness. Pure existence, pure consciousness. So because it is everywhere, it is called Brahman. Because it is the underlying creator of the Jagat, it is called Ishvara. That is the general definition. So for 99%, for all practical purposes, Ishvara and Brahman are the same. But when it comes to Vedanta terminology, when we talk about technical terms in Vedanta, Ishvara is a little different from Brahman. And what is the definition of Ishvara? Maya Sahita Brahman is Ishvara in Vedanta. Maya Sahita Brahman is Ishvara. When Maya is subsumed within Ishvara and it does not come out and act, then he is called Brahman. When he shows the Trigunas of Maya, then he is called Ishvara. So Ishvara can also be understood as Saguna Brahman. Brahman can be understood as Nirguna Brahman. So Nirguna Brahman is called Brahman, Saguna Brahman is called Ishvara. So Maya is always Maya is his own Shakti. But
so Maya is then Maya comes in the Brahman, and then Maya origination is in from Brahman.
Yeah, so Maya is a Shakti that Brahman has. If he shows it outside, he is called Ishvara. If he doesn't show it and just keeps it within himself, he is called Brahman. Just like a magician. A magician has the capacity to do magic. If he doesn't show the capacity to do magic, he is just himself. Nobody knows that he is a magician. But if he shows that capacity to do magic and performs the magic, everybody knows that he is the magician. If he is just walking on the street, not showing any trick, but the entire talent to do magic is still within him, nobody knows that he is a magician. But once he shows his talent and shows all the magic tricks, everybody knows, oh, this is the great magician. Just like that, when Brahman just is within himself, then he is called Brahman. When he shows this Maya Shakti, comes out in the form of Prakriti, comes out in the form of Jagat, comes out in the form of Saguna Ishvara. So when he shows that Shakti, he appears as Brahma, he appears as Vishnu, he appears as Shiva, he appears as Ganapati, he appears as Shakti. All these names and forms he takes when he wants to show his Shakti. If he doesn't show his Shakti, he withdraws all the Shakti into himself and Tadeko Vashishtaha Shiva Kevaloham. He is Kevalaha. He is the only one that exists. When nothing else exists around him, then nobody can see what power he has. If nothing else can exist, if nobody can see, all power is within him. When he wants to show the power, then it comes out in the form of Ish. Then this Jagat Vyaparam starts. All this creation, maintenance, annihilation, blessing, doing puja, all this Dvaitam starts only when he shows that Maya, he wields that Maya Shakti. So that is the technical difference between Ishvara and Brahma.
So that means Jiva, is Jiva created by the Brahman then? Or so Ishvara? Is Jiva created by Ishvara or Brahman?
Jiva is, again, there are two parts of Jiva. There is a Jiva that we think as Jiva, which is the body, the mind, the intellect, and all those things. That part is created by Ishvara within the purview of Maya, because that is all part of Maya. There is another part of Jiva, which is the Atma Swarupam, the Satchidananda Swarupam that is within the Jiva, that is not created by Maya, that is Ishvara, that is Brahman himself. So this Atma Swarupam is covered by this Prakriti, called the Shariram, called the mind, called the intellect. This is all modification of Prakriti, modification of Maya Shakti. When we talked about it in Tattva Bodha, what is the root cause of the Sthula Shariram and Sukshma Shariram? What is the root cause?
Ignorance.
And what is that Shariram called, that ignorance?
Karana Shariram.
Karana Shariram. So the Karana Shariram is the root cause of Sthula Shariram and Sukshma Shariram. But is there a Karanam for the Atma that is within the Sthula Sukshma Shariras? There is no other Karanam. Atma exists by itself, because Atma's Swarupam is Sat and Chit, existence and consciousness. So Brahman or Atma, whatever you want to call it, it exists as it is and creates a cover around himself called this Prakriti, which appears in so many names, so many forms, so many shapes, so many colors. All these projections that happen because of his own Maya Shakti. But internally, just like the parrot in the cage, that Atma is sitting still without any modification whatsoever. So Jiva is a combination of Atma and Prakriti, Atma and Maya. The Maya part of it is created, but the Atma part of it is Ishvara himself, Brahman himself. That is why Ishvaraha Sarvabhutanam Hriddeshe Arjuna Tishthati Brahmayan Sarvabhutani Yantrarudhani Mayera. Ishvaraha Sarvabhutanam Hriddeshe Tishthati. So he, inside the heart of every Jiva, that Ishvara is sitting. Brahmayan Sarvabhutani Yantrarudhani Mayera. Just like how a merry-go-round rotates around the axis, the Ishvara is sitting like an axis, and he is turning this entire Jagat like a merry-go-round because of his Maya Shakti.
Okay, and then ignorance is in the Atma, and then?
Ignorance.
What is the...
So, again, Atma, if you look at as Brahman, so when we look at Atma as Brahman, Brahman is, what is the first Mahavakya, first Rigveda Mahavakya, what is that?
Tattvamasi.
Prajnana Brahma.
Prajnanam Brahma. Means what? Brahman is the ultimate source of knowledge. Right? So there is no possibility of ignorance in Brahman. Then where is this ignorance coming from? Where is this Maya coming from? This covering that is called Maya, who is it covering? Where is it coming from? That Brahman is creating by himself. In the language of the religion, we call it a Leela. When we ultimately ask the question, why should Bhagavan create this Jagat? The ultimate answer in religion is Leela. It is his Leela. He is just doing it for his sport. But when it comes to Maya, what is the answer? When it comes to Maya also, there is no logical answer for it. There is no logical answer for why Brahman should create this Maya and project among him, around him. Because Brahman can remain as Brahman. And absolutely no problem. But why should he create or bring out this Shakti called Maya, project around himself, and make this appearance, magic called Jagat, this magic called Jiva, all this, why it should happen? There is no answer in Shastras. The Shastras say that is an anirvachaniya prashna. That is an indeterminate question. We cannot determine why Ishvara does it. Veda also does not answer it. Veda says he simply willed. He wanted to do it. Because it is his power, he wanted to do it. He wanted to do it. So kamayata, he wanted to do it. Bahusyam prajayeti, let me become many prajas. He willed. Veda also says he simply willed. So when he simply willed and willingly covered himself with this Maya, but at one level as Brahman, he controls the Maya. He is not under the control of Maya. He controls the Maya. That is when he is called Ishvara, because he has full control of the Maya. But he also became another level called Jiva and became under the control of Maya. And this is where he started porting his Leela, by becoming a Jiva and coming under the control of Maya and becoming Ishvara and being in control of Maya. And this is where how the Leela has started. Why he has to become a Jiva? No answer. Just because that Shakti is there. Why someone has to show a particular Shakti? I have a capability to run. If I'm running, why should I run? Just because I have the capability. A magician, just because he has the capability, he's showing the magic. Of course, when we take practical situations into consideration, okay, he is earning his livelihood, all those things come into picture. But for Ishvara, what else is there? He is called akamahataha. He has no kamam whatsoever, no desire to achieve. What is in this jagat that he needs to achieve or he needs to attain that he already does not have? Nothing. So why he does it? No answer. Shastras cannot answer it. Even Veda cannot answer it, saying, I do not know why Brahman does it. But I can answer one thing, which is, all this is just a Leela. All this is just an illusion. All this is just a projection. That is what you should focus on. The fact that this is projection. If you take it as real, then the real problem comes into picture, where why he should do it. But Shastra also says it is all a projection. So don't get caught up in the problem of asking the question why this projection happens. Get out of the projection, then you don't need to ask that question. Because once you become a Brahmajnani, then only you will remain as Brahman. this projection will not bother you. If that will not bother you, you don't need to ask the question why it happens, because for you it doesn't happen anymore. So that is how Shastra answers.
Okay, Randy.
What other questions do you have?
One question, Guru Garu, on the karma part of it. We have like a Sanchita karma, Agami karma, and Prarabdha karma. Like just this one thing like comes every time looking at it and talking to, just thinking about why you need to have, like when we basically in the lifespan, the karma or the karma phalam, whatever we do, why not be applied in the same life or in the same at the same time, so that you realize the mistake what you did and correct or do understand what that is.
Are you saying, so let me understand your question. Are you saying whatever karma you, bad karma or good karma you did in this particular lifetime, why don't we get the results of it within the same lifetime with some kind of correlation between you did X, so you are getting Y with that kind of knowledge, so that you'll clearly understand, okay, I did that, so I'm getting this. I did that thing, so I'm getting this. Why doesn't that all happen within one life, like one lifetime, so that we have a better idea?
Yes.
Is that what you're asking?
Yes, it is, like, because like sometimes we say like this is the Purva Janma Sukrutam and all that, like you don't really know what that is, and you just like kind of like it's vague and just doesn't get clear. And I think we talk about like not thinking about it, doing the good karma, but that comes nagging of many times and just like could not get over it. So I just want to get like, why is it? And
okay, so the karma phalam, the bhoktrutvam of karma phalam doesn't only happen in this plane. We think that our earth and the life within earth and the human life within earth is the only plane of existence. But when we consider Ishvara's srishti, the plane of existence and the plane of experience of karma phalam is not just this earth. It could be anywhere in any corner of this universe, or anywhere in any corner of any universe. Or within this earth, it can be in the animal plane, it can be in the plant plane, it can be in the insect plane, or even beyond this universe, in any of the urdhvalokas or adholokas. It could be in devalokam, in brahmalokam, in kailasam, in vaikuntham, in janolokam, tapolokam, in any plane of existence that karma phalam can be born. So, if you do an immensely punya karma, a great punya karma, for example, our great kings in the previous generation, they have built so many huge temples, Vishnualayas, Shivalayas, Shaktialayas, so on and so forth. And it says, Shastra says, if you build one Shivalaya or one Vishnualaya and do the proper Vaidika Pratishtha, That gives you thousands of years of punya phalam to spend in Svargalokam. So when Shastra is saying that for that one single act, you have earned enough punyam to go in Svargalokam, not having to go through any of the difficulties of life, and stay there for 1,000 years and enjoy the sukham or bhogam of Svargalokam, how can that sukham can be given in this Manushya Lokam? That cannot be given. How do we know this? How do we know that that Sukham is greater than this Veda itself says? When we learn Taittiri Upanishad, it comes. The Veda says, imagine, I gave you this example many times. Imagine a young man who is 100% healthy, and in 100% youth, and 100% good-looking, 100% powerful, 100% knowledgeable, and 100% virtuous. So, one who is 100% in youth, one who has 100% strength, one who has 100% knowledge, one who has 100% virtue, and one who is 100% in terms of, you know, all the good qualities. Let us call him a Mahapurusha. So when one such Mahapurusha is there and he is given this entire earth to be ruled, and there is no enemy for him. Everything that he wants, he has. He has no disease. He is in full youth. He has full knowledge. He is full of good qualities. First of all, imagining that scenario itself is extremely difficult. It is impossible for many people. And he has control of this entire earth. The sukham that he experiences at that point is one unit of sukham. And when you go to Urdhvaloka, there are names of planes given in the Veda. When you go to Karma Devata plane, he experiences 100 times this Anandam. When he goes to Devata plane, he experiences 100 times the previous Anandam. When he goes to the Brihaspati plane or Indra plane, he experiences 100 times, 100x that Ananda. When he goes to the Brihaspati plane, 100x more. When he goes to the Brahmalokam, 100x more. Finally, Veda says, the Brahmajnani, one Atmajnani who has achieved the Atma Swarupam, Brahma Swarupam here, he achieves all these multiplied, even beyond that, he will achieve right here. So that is the comparison Shastra gives. So if this entire punyam that he has done with the control of the entire earth is one unit of punyam, and he has done so much punyam to go and experience there, that much punyam, how can it be given here? It is not possible to be given here. Similarly, if one has done so much evil, somebody has killed millions of people unnecessarily, caused trouble to so many people unnecessarily, has done unspeakable things, for that person, the dukkham that has to be given, it is not enough to give in one lifetime. He has to suffer for lifetimes and lifetimes together for what he did, because what he has to do is not controlled by Bhagavan. Everybody is given free will. You can do whatever you want. Tomorrow you can go and cause unlimited harm to so many people, or unlimited good to so many people. So that much punyam, how it can be given in one lifetime? It cannot be given. So punyam also, it is not possible for us to exhaust in one lifetime. Papam also, it is not possible to exhaust in one lifetime. That is one aspect of it. The second aspect of it is, if everybody is exhausted, if everybody exhausts their punyam and papam in one lifetime, then there is no question of reincarnation at all. There is no question of reincarnation at all. One doesn't have to be reincarnated at all, right?
Yes.
If one doesn't have to be reincarnated, that means, if you have done only punyam or only papam, you just exhaust it here. You just fully exhaust it here, however intense it is, and you are done. But we do see the evidence of reincarnation all the time. That is how the world order is. So since reincarnation is happening, that means that it is not possible for us to, even Shastra, so many examples are there that reincarnation is happening. The fact that reincarnation is happening, that means that it is not possible practically to exhaust all the karma in one lifetime. That is the exhaustion part. Then the second part is the knowing part. Can I know what I did at some point and what I am going through right now? Normally for people it is not possible to know, because we keep doing so many karmas with our manas, with our vak, and with our karacharanadis all the time. So every single day we may be doing millions of karmas. So if we have to correlate to each of them, our mind will be tired and our mind will just get occupied in that only. It is not necessary for us to know. But it is possible for us to know. There are yoga shaktis that one can develop by intense sadhana. Those are called siddhis. So if one can develop enough siddhis, one will get the ability to look in the past lives and even sometimes into some part of the future and know, okay, this is what I'm going to go through. Maybe 5 years from now, 10 years from now, I'm going to go through this particular thing because I did that particular thing. It is possible to develop that shakti, that power. But those are called siddhis. There are people who have developed those siddhis. But they will again act as distraction. If you don't know how to use them properly, you will misuse them. You will try to use them for financial gain, because not everybody is pure enough in the heart to use the siddhis properly. One can develop the siddhis, but to use them properly for the welfare of everybody is not that easy, because power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, right? So as we get more power, we need more control, which most people don't develop, and they end up using it for the bad of themselves and also the world. That is why Aishwarya generally doesn't give that power. But is it possible? Absolutely it is possible.
Guru Garu, on that karma yoga note.
Self lingering. Sorry, did that answer your question?
Yes, Guru Garu.
Okay, what else? In entire Tattva Bodha, nobody else has any questions?
Guru Garu, what is the difference between karma bhoga and karma yoga?
Karma bhoga is the phalam that you are going to experience because of the karma that you do. So any karma will have karma bhogam or karma phalam. Karma bhogam and karma phalam are the same. So you do any manasika karma, thinking, vachika karma, talking, or kayika karma with your body, every single karma will have a karma phalam. So we have Newton's third law, right? Every action has equal and opposite reaction. So just like that, every karma will either put some balance in either the punyam bank balance or papam bank balance. Whether you are thinking, whether you are talking, whether you are doing with your body. So those three types of karma result in karma phalam. And that karma phalam has to be experienced at some point in some lifetime, in some plane. That is karma bhogam. Karma yogam is a sadhana, which is a prerequisite for the Vedanta. Karma yoga means performing the same karma, but with Ishvara Arpana Buddhi and Ishvara Prasada Buddhi. Whatever I am doing, Tatkurushva Madarpanam, I am doing it for Ishvara's sake. But that has one big caveat to it, which means if you are doing any karma as Ishvara Arpana karma, then what are the types of karmas you should be doing? You should not be doing any papa karma. Willfully, you should not do any papa karma, because it doesn't make sense to keep doing papa karmas and say, I offer this to Bhagavan, he will take care of it. That doesn't make sense. So either keep on doing punya karmas or satvika karmas, or if by mistake you do a papa karma, you offer to him saying, I don't know whether what I am doing is right or wrong. I am offering it to you. I am doing it with the best of my intention to do a good punya karma, and rest is whatever you decide.
So, but when you are saying that, you are having some desire again there, right? So, korika undi kadandi, manu ishvara arpana chesina kuda ish.
Yes, that is desire is there. That is the first step, because it is not possible for everybody to do to nishkama karma. Sakama karma is acceptable as a first step. First, very first step is stop doing papa karma. Manasa, vacha, karmana, stop doing papa karma. So that the intention to hurt other people is gone. So once you are stopping to do papa karma, then next step, go to punya karma. Punya karma, whether you do it for yourself or your family or your community, the larger the scope that you do sankalpam for, the better it is for punya karma. If you are doing a punya karma just for yourself, saying I want to be good, my health needs to be good, all these things, only limited phalam. If you are thinking about your family, a little better. Your community, even better. Your entire state, better. Country, better.
No.
The entire world, even better. Entire creation.
But those are all karma bhoga then, right? It's not karma yoga.
You are still talking about karma bhoga only, because still they are punya karmas. So which is better than doing papa karmas? So papa karmas are the worst. Then punya karmas are better. Punya karmas for oneself is more narrow. Punya karmas dedicated to the entire creation is the broadest. That is why we have sarve janaha sukhino bhavantu, loka samasta sukhino bhavantu. That is in the sakama aspect. Then beyond that is the nishkama aspect. Whatever you give, I take, but I would like something nice is the sakama aspect. Because you have some desire. I want this to be nice. I want this phalam to come. I want that phalam to come. But beyond that is the nishkama aspect, which is the real definition of karma yoga, wherein I don't have any desire, either for myself or my family or my community or for anybody. I just do it because Shastra says you must do it. I just do it because I do it for Bhagavan's sake. Whatever he gives, I have no desire whatsoever. I have no sankalpam whatsoever. I leave everything to Ishvara. That is nishkama karma, which is the real definition of karma yoga. So, from being a karmi, become a karma yogi. That is the right way of doing sadhana. Right now, we are not even a karmi. We are papa karmi. From papa karmi, first become a punya karmi. And punya karmi means karmi. So from papa karmi, become a karmi. From karmi, become a karma yogi. Then, what is the result of becoming a karma yogi? And what is the result of achieving karma yoga? When your mind is not worried about thinking about so many things, whether I'll get this or not, whether I'll achieve this or not, whether this thing will happen to me or not, whether I can make this happen or not, all these need brain cycles. And constant worry, constant frustration, constant disappointment, all these things will vanish and mind becomes clean, mind becomes clear, mind becomes pure, mind becomes free of all these things, because mind doesn't need to worry about whether X will happen or not. That expectation is gone. Whatever Bhagavan gives, I'm okay with it. So then mind becomes pure and clear and free and settled. When that mind settles down, that is when it becomes ready to receive jnana. And that is why in Chitta Shuddhi, Sadhana Chaitasthaya Sampatti, the ultimate goal of Sadhana Chaitasthaya Sampatti is what? Chitta Shuddhi and Chitta Ekagrata. These are the two things that one needs to develop. Achieving Chitta Shuddhi is, for most people, a task of millions of lifetimes. Chitta Shuddhi is not that easy. So, but Chitta Shuddhi, when it comes, then the real Vedanta Sadhana starts. And Chitta Shuddhi is only possible through Nishkama Upasana, Nishkama Karma, also called Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga.
That Guru, one thing, like how we basically see these things in the regular day-to-day life, you basically have like all the things what we do, we need to do like with the kids and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How, like, we see this through this particular lens and get over the thinking of overthinking or thinking of the things what we need to do are like the things coming towards, like, okay, kids, education, that, this, and all those things. So, how do we see through that? Just like every time we basically talk about this, and by next day morning, when we start with the regular day-to-day things, it just like goes like, okay, how do, yes, these are all like good, we hear it, and how do I put that in the perspective in a day-to-day life of our, like...
That is our duty, right, Guru? Those are all duties which you need to do.
Absolutely. Those are all duties. The only in terms of the mindset, the change that needs to happen is, I am doing my duty. Even if it's my own kids, I am doing my duty as a householder, as the head of the household. This is my duty. I am doing my duty to give them a good education, to give them this, to give them that, and all that. If they don't do well, it is my duty to correct them. It is my duty to put them in the right path. It is my duty to even yell at them. It is my duty to even maybe punish them at some point. But internally in my mind, I am detached from it. I don't hold a grudge. I don't hold a frustration. I don't hold a disappointment. If my kid eventually does not go to whatever university that we have planned for, I am not disappointed, because I did my best with the best of my ability, with the best of my resources, and hopefully he also did his best with the best of his ability and resources, and combined with all this karma, Ishvara has granted us this. That's it. So if we get frustrated and disappointed and get worried about that, that is where we get dragged back into being a karmi rather than a karma yogi. It could be anything. It could be a disease. It could be a health issue. It could be an education issue. It could be a family relationship issue within the with the kids, with the parents, with the relatives, with the friends. Any situation, it can happen. Then as we keep on doing this, what happens is we will be able to deal with them in a balanced way. The reason why we get into the problems is because we develop mental expectations and hold on to those expectations as absolute. So if that expectation is not fulfilled, then we get disappointed, get angry, get frustrated, so on and so forth. Simple thing, like, okay, I walk into the home, my wife should do X, Y, and Z, or my wife should say, if she doesn't say it or doesn't do what I want, I get angry. So that is because you have developed a mental expectation. Okay, so what? She didn't say it. She's an individual. she is in her own path of evolution. I'm not worried. Why should I look for something? Look for, you know, maybe a praise or appreciation or thank you or even somebody else at it. That as we go keep on doing and doing and doing, it's not easy at all. Even the greatest of the greatest rishis fell for these things. So it is not easy at all. Why we are talking about this? We start small. Start with the small things. You don't have to apply karma yoga in the big decisions of life yet. Start with the small decisions of life, day to day. Make sure from your side on a day to day basis, there is no negativity created in this house. That's it. Like, don't say any rude words. Be calm and cool. So once we practice, start practicing these things, then we will understand and know how to apply them to a bigger thing, a bigger thing, a bigger thing, a bigger thing. At the highest level, our own body, our own health, our own life, those are the biggest things for anybody. At that point, that is a jnani, that is a yogi, where though even those things, he'll be able to look at it as Ishvara Prasadam. Okay, whatever happens, happens. So it is not easy. I am not even saying it happens within one lifetime. It might take hundreds of lifetimes to get to a karma yoga, to get to apply karma yoga to a big decision. Apply karma yoga to the smallest decisions. That is how one should start. All these practical things we'll talk about as we get examples when we go through Bhakti Govindam and those things. When we get each scenario, we'll talk about practical examples. Okay, in this scenario, normally what do we do? A karma yogi, how does he do? When we do upasana, how do we do? All those things we'll talk about. Okay, we are beyond time. Any other quick question? Or can we stop?
Yeah, I think probably have a moment.
Okay. So I will dedicate one more session next week to question answers, and if there are question answers, I'll answer. Otherwise, since somebody asked about this, I think this Brahman and Ishvara and Brahman and Atma, I've answered a little bit. If you're still not clear, let me know. So next time I'll talk a little bit about the Maya part of it and the summary of Advaita. Then we'll go from there. So meanwhile, if you can work on that that homework thing, that'll be good. So we'll have one more session next week for reviews, and after that, maybe after Thanksgiving or something, we'll do maybe one or two more sessions we'll have for reviews and summary. Then after Thanksgiving, we'll start with new one.
Next week, I will not be able to join Gruber. I'll be in France.
Yeah, that's
so right.
See, next Wednesday is 20th. The following Wednesday is 27th, which is the day before Thanksgiving. So most people will be traveling and all that, so we may not have a class on 27th. That is the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. So we will only have one class next week before Thanksgiving. So we will use that to review anything. Then after Thanksgiving, we can start Bhaja Govindam.
Okay, then.
Okay.
Yeah?
For Bhaja Govindam, any preferred book, Gurugar, or just...
Bhaja Govindam, the Chinmaya Mission book.
Chinmaya Mission. Okay. Chinmaya has the book right now.
Yeah. Chinmaya okay. Should. Otherwise, talk to Venkat, he can acquire it.
Okay. No, sir. Okay.
Purnamada Purnamidam Purnamidam
నమస్కారం గురుగారు.
Namaskar, Guruji.
Thank you, Guruji.